One quick update before we get into today's conversation. Rain Organica has split up. The business is now Rain Organica Skincare and your hormone specialist. You may recall from last season, I had quite a few episodes around hormone balance and chronic UTIs, and also some episodes around fertility awareness, because those are very different spaces, skincare versus hormone balance. I have decided that it's best to just have two brands. So while Rain Organica Skincare is hosting this season of holistic wellness in season 4, it will be all about hormones, and that season will be hosted by your hormone specialist. Regardless, they're all sponsored. Regardless, they're all hosted by me, Brandi Searcy. All right, to connect with your hormone specialist, in case you cannot wait for season 4, because there are a number of episodes that are already recorded that will help you navigate conditions like PCOS, and we go a little deeper into fertility awareness in that season as well. And in case you cannot wait for it, one of the best ways to connect with me and that brand is at yourhormonespecialist.com. There's also a YouTube channel now, youtube.com at Your Hormone Specialist. And you'll find me on all of the major social media networks at Your Hormone Specialist. All right, and now, without further ado, let's jump into today's episode. Fredrika Saren, who is originally from Sweden, is an environmental activist, a public speaker, and a writer. She is the author of A Practical Guide to Zero Waste for Families, and she lives right here in San Diego with her husband and 3 children, Isabella, Noah, and Liam. Her family has been featured in the documentary Zero Time to Waste and also on Ava DuVernay's TV series Home Sweet Home. There are links in today's show notes to find Fredrika on her website, zerowastefamily.com, also on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. Without further ado, let's get into today's episode. Welcome to Holistic Wellness, a podcast exploring the science and metaphysics of health and wellness. I'm your host, Brandi Searcy, founder and formulator at Rain Organica, where you'll find holistic skincare in one simple routine. Today, Fredrika Searcy of Zero Waste Family joins me to talk about sustainable living. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. It's such an honor.
Will you start out and just share your own sustainability journey?
Oh, wow. Well, I've been an environmental writer for over 20 years, and I wrote a lot about holding companies and government accountable. But once I became a mom in 2006 to my daughter Isabella, who is now 17, almost 17, I should say, I realized the missing piece was individual action. And I realized also that climate change was going to be the biggest threat my kids were going to face. And I realized that we as individuals actually drive consumerism and the government and the business, that they will follow whatever the consumers choose. And I'm a living proof of this, because in 2006, when I started this journey, there were no zero waste movement. There wasn't even a name zero waste. There wasn't anyone doing it, and there weren't any replacement options even. So, but if you fast forward to today in 2023, I mean, it is all, like, everyone is talking zero waste. Everyone is talking about reducing waste and living sustainable. And there are millions of businesses who are selling anything zero waste, makeup to cleaning supplies to clothes.
That's true. When you started this path towards
incorporating sustainability and zero waste practices into your own lifestyle, what did that look like?
Well, it started very slow. So first of all, my husband was not along on this at all. I mean, it wasn't that he didn't believe in climate change and that we should live more sustainable. He was just very typical thinking that I don't have time. This is going to cost a lot of money. This is going to be a lot of work. So I kind of did this journey in the beginning on my own, and I took it one step at a time, and I had fun with it, which I thought was really important. So I did whatever research I could, and I took like every year I would challenge myself to change one habit that was causing waste. And it started with canned beans and tomatoes. And it's like, okay, well, I'm going to cook my own beans from dry and I'm going to make my own tomato sauce. And then the next time it was something different. And this is what I kept on doing until in 2016, my husband actually went on paternity leave and realized that all the things that I'd implemented wasn't that really hard. It wasn't taking a lot of time. And more important, it was saving us a lot of money. So then he got really interested and started doing his own research because he had the time. And he is the one who said in 2016, we're going to go zero waste. We're going to remove the trash can. We're ready. Let's do this.
So, just speaking of that, how do you do it? Because I mean, I feel like my husband and I, we're decent. But eliminating a trash can, like that's serious talking. So, how
Well,
do
I
you do
have to
that?
say, yeah, I have to say, it's kind of funny because when my husband did it, I did look at the trash can leaving the house and went, oh my God, I have three kids. How is this going to be possible? So the first thing we did was actually doing a trash audit. And it's not as bad as it sounds, but we just literally looked at everything that would normally go in the trash because we no longer had a trash can and start thinking about like, okay, how can I change this habit of this particular thing. And the one thing that I realized was that one third of our waste was food waste. And for a family of five, it was literally throwing money into the trash. So I started like really looking at like, okay, instead of going shopping for what I want to eat, why not look at what I have in the fridge and really start making changes there? So I started storing the food better. I started really keeping an eye on what we had, and I implemented a leftover eating day, which is Sundays for us, when we take out all the leftovers and we make a fun meal out of it, or anyone in the family eat whatever they want of those leftovers. But just that one reduced the waste by one third. The next one was food packaging. So then I had to come with how could I buy food that was not in packaging that I couldn't recycle or compost or reuse. And then the last category, which was then actually things that I just had to say, we had to say start saying no to. And that was like prepackaged snacks for the kids, and like chips and sodas and stuff like that, that there is really isn't any good replacement for. And so I always say that it is the category of that what you can compost. Or you can eat, which is the organic matter, and then it is the food packaging. It's a huge part. And then the third one is the category where you usually learn to say no.
So I have a question with you on this though, because I think, so is your family vegetarian?
We're vegans.
Okay. Because that to me feels like the biggest challenge is as a household that consumes meat, what do we do with, the scraps? Those aren't, I mean, I don't want to put those in a compost pile. And then it's the same way there where you have the packaging from the, from the meat. So are
Yeah.
there any,
Yes,
yeah,
excuse me.
for people who aren't, sorry, yeah, for people who aren't vegetarian even, are there ways to reduce that piece of trash generation?
Yeah, so first of all, you can compost meat. You can't put it in the worm compost, obviously, because worms are vegetarians. You can put it in the bokashi compost. So we do have people come to visit us. And we have people who eat meat. Not in my family, but the people who come to visit me.
Yeah.
And I'm not the kind of vegan who's going to be like, oh, you have to eat only vegan in my house. I will not cook it for you, but you are more than welcome to eat in my house. And have people who bring food in for themselves. So bokashi compost, you can put in anything, including meat and fish bones, because there's no worms involved in that. So that's the first one. And then the food packaging, I think that, again, because I have never eaten meat, I have been vegan for a very long time, so it's hard for me to imagine. But for the ones that who have bought meat, I can encourage them to go to the farmer's market or go where they can buy meat and they can bring their own packaging and ask to actually put the meat in that one. I think Bea Johnson, who is, everyone called her the mother of zero waste movement, she would bring her own containers to buy her fish and cheese and dairy to whenever she went grocery shopping.
Okay. Yeah, and I know when we're talking again, something that's not in the vegan space, when we're talking dairy, there is a movement back towards the glass, at least for milk, back towards the glass bottles that are then reused. I think where this feels more challenging, and now speaking to a vegan, it may be hard to bridge this, but are for things that people enjoy, like the fermented foods, so the sauerkrauts, the in plant-based yogurts or even dairy-based yogurts, kind of what, because of course with that it's very much like canning. You're going to have to start doing it yourself, right?
Well, no, there are so many options that actually comes in glass, like you said. In the co-op where we shop, they actually sell yogurt cream and milk in glass jars or bottles that you bring back, and I think you get paid for bringing them back, and I think that's a great option. And I think for vegans, obviously there are yogurts and stuff like that that comes in that glass. I do make our own yogurt only because I found that it's a lot easier. And I have to
Yeah.
say that becoming a zero waste family or even sustainable, you have to be creative. You have to have fun with this. And if I took this very dead serious and beat myself up every time it didn't work out, I would have stopped long time ago. I think that the fact that we have a sense of humor about this and a little bit like, okay, well, that didn't work out. Okay, well, on to the next thing. You can't beat yourself up. Every little step and every little change you make makes a huge difference. So don't look at the big picture. Look at what you can do today. One small change and make that. I think it is the best way to go. I didn't go zero waste overnight. It took me 17 years to get to where well, it took us 15 years, sorry, to get where we are. And today, we have moved and we have gone through changes where like something that worked before suddenly doesn't work, and we have to just go back to the drawing board and think about new creative ways. But like I said, just having fun and like looking and researching, how can you do this? I remember when we started at the daycare where my boys went, they used disposable diapers. So my kids will come home with this disposable diaper. Well, I couldn't compost that. I couldn't reuse it. I couldn't compost it. And it's like, what am I going to do with this? And so I had to come up with really something really creative. And I just talked to the daycare and came up with a plan that would actually work for us. And again, it's like just coming up and asking around and checking it. Like, have again, but have fun with it. I think it's important. Don't beat yourself. If that doesn't work out, if the meat thing doesn't work out, it's okay. Keep eating your meat, buying it in plastic, it's fine. Find something else that's easier, something that's more tangible to change.
Okay. So speaking of the disposable diapers, what was your solution with that?
I had to ask them very nicely, but I will bring reusable diapers. They weren't so keen on
Okay.
it, but I had I explained what we were doing and that this was a challenge. So she came up with, well, is it okay if I use disposable diapers while they're here? And I will take responsibility for it, but I will put on the your diaper when they go home. So, I mean, in the perfect, was it a perfect solution? No, because it was still using a diaper, but I understand I can't impose my beliefs on someone else.
Okay. And then maybe just staying with this hygiene piece of it a little bit. So what does it look like in terms of toilet paper use? I mean, if we're talking truly zero waste, is the best option just to use recycled toilet paper?
I think so. I mean, it's so funny. I got so many questions about the toilet paper. People are dying to hear about this. I think ever since Colin Beaver, No Impact Man, made the headlines that they were not using toilet paper in their home, this has been like, oh, you're zero waste. You don't use toilet paper. We use toilet paper. We use the recyclable pipe paper that is from. Now I can't remember the name of it. The company it has some really fun. Name. Okay. I will see if I can come up with it. But anyway, but I use that. There are so many options for those, and they deliver it to your house. They don't come in plastic, and they are a sustainable paper. So you don't cut down any trees to wipe your bum.
Okay. And then also just kind of rounding out this conversation with menstrual hygiene products, just because, and with that one's one that I feel like it's much easier to find, and it has been for quite a while because there's so many options in the space. But let's go ahead and talk about that while we're talking about this.
Yes, so personal hygiene products. Well, when we started this journey, there were no options without making myself. And I have naturally curly hair. I made my own shampoo and I look like a troll. A very cute troll, but I look like a troll. I mean, it was bad. And it was my hairstylist who said, oh, Fredrika, please, I'm begging you, you gotta stop this. This is bad, bad, bad. And she said, what if I do some research and come up with a way that we can get some shampoo for you and conditioner that is sustainable, has no chemicals, and maybe come in a bottle or something that is glass or something more sustainable. And she did, and she came actually through for me. It took her a week, but she came up with something, and the bottle was actually post-consumer recycled plastic. Again, not perfect, but at least, and she let me take it back and refill it in her salon. So again, it's like you have to be creative and you have to be patient with yourself. Today,
Yeah.
though, there are so many options. I mean, there are so many. You can, for us, we can actually go and there are zero waste stores all over San Diego. We can take our own bottles and refill it. I do not have to look like a troll anymore. There are many, many options out there. There are makeup companies that are specializing. My daughter wears that makeup. I wear that makeup that you can use refillable. So you can buy the refillable things and add them. There's no plastic, there's no chemicals involved. So there are today, I have to say, I wish I would have gone zero waste today instead of 17 years ago. It would have been a lot easier journey, but I probably wouldn't have had as much fun as I did.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the things too is for the people out there who don't remember what it was like in 2006 or researching things on the internet.
I know it's and I think that if anyone is interested in learning what it was like, go read Colin Beaver's book, No Impact Man. It was 1 year that they lived in middle of New York and decided to have zero impact on the planet, which of course I should throw it out. You cannot have a completely zero waste, zero impact on the planet. You will have some impact no
Yeah.
matter what you do. But anyway, but they were reducing theirs as much as possible. And that is, I felt sorry for his wife because I don't think she was at all into this. She loved her drinks and takeout food. She loved shopping. She loved clothes. She loved her TV. And he took it all away, including the toilet paper, and elevator, and they couldn't even go in the cab. But so if you want to read a really funny book, like to see what it was like in 2006, I think I will highly recommend that one.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for sharing that one. So you wrote a book, speaking of books, on zero waste. What can you just talk a little bit more about what you talked about in that book?
Well,
Like how
so
it's
this
broken
is
down and yeah, go ahead.
so this is the book that I wish I had in 2006.
Okay.
So this is everything that I learned along the way, and I want to make it easier for everyone else, and I want it to be like a practical guide. with no judgment. I make it very clear in the book. I'm not judging. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm never going to be like, oh, you had to be perfect. You had to be like me. That is not what we're doing this. So the book it is literally all parts of life. It's everything from traveling, kids, if you have that, gardening, to birthday parties, to shopping, to cooking, clothes, you name it. It has everything with my recipes, with my the companies that I recommend, that I've been vetting myself, that I know are sustainable and usually doesn't package anything in plastic. And so it's just to make it easier, and you can pick and choose whatever. I want it to be like a book that you can go to and be like, okay, I really would like to reduce my waste when it comes to traveling. Well, here are all these tips. And that's what I did.
Okay. So it's really a, it sounds like it's broken down by chapters on if you want to reduce your footprint in travel, if you want to reduce your footprint in cooking, whatever it may be, just, here's your quick reference guide.
Exactly. I tried to
Okay.
cover everything, and I'm very proud because my daughter wrote a chapter. It's called A Confession of a Zero Waste Teenager. And she talks very candid about what it's like to grow up zero waste because she was 9 years old when we did. So she actually has a lot of memories compared to her brothers who have very little memories. They think we've been zero waste their whole life. But she talks about what it's like to be a teenager and be a little bit different because she is a zero waste.
And you garden quite a bit as well, right?
Yes, so the garden became obviously a big part of how we can reduce our carbon footprint. But also, I love gardening, but we took it definitely to the next level to grow 70% of our own food just in our backyard. And it became like a fun challenge. How much food can we grow in a small space? And turns out we can feed a whole army. And during the pandemic, we could have probably lived very comfortably for months.
Wow. Okay. So could we talk a little bit more about that? Like what size garden, and this is feeding 5 people
Yes,
and
so
roughly 70%.
I mean, it all depends on the time of the year, obviously. It is about 600 square feet, so it's not very big at all, and it's just a backyard. But we came up with to grow on the front and the back and on the side of the house. Again, we started like one box at a time, and then the garden kept growing. I had a very beautiful mentor. His name was Farmer Bill Tall, from City Nursery Farmer, and he founded that in San Diego. Unfortunately, he passed away a couple of years ago from cancer. But he told me, like, Fredrika, when it comes to your garden, only grow things that would actually benefit you, that would actually feed you, or would provide you flowers or something like that. We took out all the rose bushes, we took out all the grass, and we replaced it with edible. So we had fruit trees, we have just vegetable boxes and chickens and space for the kids to still have fun.
Okay. So with that, do you have to worry about m maximizing your space and growing, really growing vertical and growing kind of several different things all on maybe one trellis? Or how do you do it? How do you design it? Kind of what is your advice if someone wants to, start growing some of their own food or more of their own food?
Well, I think it is just that it is actually 600 square feet will actually give you a lot of growing space. But it is like that we don't literally didn't have it. We don't have any other bushes. So anything that's not edible, everything is edible in the garden. But we also use the driveway. Tomatoes grow really well on the driveway. And it's just, I think it is like you said, growing up, but also growing closer together and stuff like that.
Okay. Do you intersperse? So like you oftentimes hear for kind of natural pest control in your tomatoes, plant them next to marigolds. Do you intersperse some of the flowers in with what you're growing? Like how do you plant it? Do you plant it so that it is using these natural combinations of plants in order to keep either pests away or to support, because you have some plants that are nitrogen fixing and some plants that provide different nutrients to the soil, or again with the nitrogen example, fix different nutrients so they're usable by other plants. Like, do you incorporate those ideas and concepts into your space and into how you planned your garden?
So we tried that. Like, we tried the whole companion planting. It didn't work so great for us. For us, our philosophy is, if nothing is trying to eat my garden, we're probably not growing the right way. We have found that nature is very beautiful, and that we will get caterpillars, but then the birds will come, and the lizards will come, and they would eat those. Do we lose crop to certain things? Yes, diseases and things like that happen. We will learn, like tomatoes, you get mites very easily on them. While the main thing is to space them out. They don't stand too close to each other, and also make sure that you like prune them. I always say, like, everyone wants to grow tomatoes. Tomatoes are wonderful, and they taste better than anything else when you grow them at home. They are the most finicky little boogers on plants. They need a lot of love. We grow a lot of tomatoes, but we have learned over the years what works. What we do is, we because our garden is zero waste to begin with. We don't use any pesticides. We don't buy anything. We grow our own soil. So, for example, beans are wonderful. They bring a lot of nutrients into the soil. So, whenever we have grown beans in one box, we will then grow something like potatoes or cabbage or lettuce in that box, because it will be natural nutrients in the soil. And we just rotate all the crop. And we always have one box that will be like resting, and we would add a lot of mulch and compost and rebuild that soil, because adding organic matter to the soil is the most important thing I discovered. If you want to fight pests in your garden, add a lot of compost, add compost tea. That will actually protect. You want to make the plant strong enough to withstand any attack. That's more important than anything else. And then you will like also allow, nature to figure things out. Like, we had a gopher snake show up in our garden. I'm really terrified, like I'm really scared of snakes, and I have a dog and I have three kids. But I figured that if the gopher snake was there, he was there for a reason. He was a friend. And I invite him to come. Obviously, we had a deal, me and the snake. You stay on that side of the garden, I stay on this side of the garden. We don't have any. For some reason, he set up house right under one of my son's pumpkins. I realized that I'm not going to go and check on that pumpkin anymore, until he moved away. I mean, he eventually did. But it is, I have to say, having a garden like that, the coolest thing ever is to sit there and watch nature take care of things. Just how it works. We had hummingbirds setting up a home right above our compost, and we couldn't figure this out. But of course, there was a lot of bugs in our compost.
The
My
things.
husband would remove the cover of it every day and let them feed the little babies, because in exchange, they did pest control for us. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, I agree. And I know, just speaking for myself, after moving to California and actually seeing bats here, and I haven't seen bats since I was a kid back in Georgia, and thinking about, I think it's because the mosquito control is a lot different here. And this is the out of the six states where I've lived before, this is the state where I have experienced the fewest problems with mosquitoes. And I've lived here now for 7 years. And I think it is just because, again, California is a little bit lax on, letting nature step in. And maybe this isn't true with big cities. Maybe this isn't true elsewhere. But I think right here in at least North San Diego County, it's the case where you don't hear mosquito trucks coming by once a week like you do back down in Georgia. And their wildlife is just way more diverse. I mean, I grew up in South Georgia, lived in Colorado, and I go back there and it's like it's devoid of nature compared to here, which I think is so cool and is kind of something you wouldn't expect from such a metropolitan area.
No, I so agree. And I think some along the way, we have lost a little bit of that, and we spraying all kinds of things in our gardens to keep all kinds of animals away and try to keeping them out. But I'm like, you know, it's wonderful because all this wildlife actually do good in your garden most of the times. I mean, rats, I don't see any point of them whatsoever, but everything else, it's doing its job. And you know, you might lose a couple of plants once in a while to an animal. It's okay. It's okay. You know,
Yeah.
you fed wildlife. I think it's okay. I mean, it's like the whole snake thing. I'm not keen on having them there, but I knew that the snake was there for a reason, and he was beautiful and actually shoot entertainment for my kids.
Yeah, as exactly. And I think just speaking about the rats, it's the same way. The rats, if they're a food source for another animal, just let them be. And by all means, don't, like, this is a great time to say this is, I'm getting up on my soapbox here and just speaking to anybody listening, please do not poison rats. I cannot tell you how many times I've been in the vet office with one of my dogs, and somebody inevitably will come in and say that their dog ate a poisoned rat. And I mean, this is also where, you know, we're fortunate enough to back up to an open space where coyotes use it to run. You know, we've seen owls here. Like, please don't poison the rats. You're just hurting the other wildlife, or, you know, dogs in the neighborhood.
But it's the same thing. You don't want to spray anything in your garden because think about the bees. People freak out. They
Yeah.
see a bee and they run for the hills. I'm like, oh my God, we have bees. Whenever our plants bolt, as in going into, you know, blooming, I leave it. I leave it for the bees and I let them do their job. Actually, we had a couple of years ago, our neighbor had wild bees setting up home in her roof. And she wasn't so keen on that. But I had never had so many tomatoes and corn in my life. My garden was doing so well when she finally removed the bees because they were actually quite aggressive, and she had dogs. My kids were standing there being so sad about the bees get left behind and died eventually because they didn't have their hive anymore. They didn't have their queen. And I could tell the difference in the garden. The garden, I did not get as many tomatoes and as many corn when the bees were gone. I mean, invite them. Don't be afraid. You have a bee setting up in your garden. You know, generally bees will not harm you. I grew up with a beehive. Well, 12, but beehives because my grandfather was a bee keeper. So, you know, have I got stung by a bee? Has my kid got stung by a bee? Yes. But do I find them attacking my kids? No.
Speaking from my own experience with that too, we had a beehive. They'd taken up shop in an old owl, or set up house in an old owl box, and they were perfectly friendly until the box fell. And then that's, and we just called in we called in a bee guy, and he came out and he collected all of them and took them and added them in with his bees. And you know, they're happily making honey now, just not here anymore.
Yeah, I think it is. We gotta just look at the miracles that the nature provides for us and bring us. I would never ever ever forget. I got when I first started growing and gardening many 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 years ago before I had kids. I got the hornworms on my tomatoes, disgusting things, and I was like, oh my God, what I'm gonna do and how I'm gonna get this solved. And as I'm sitting there thinking, I see a bird hopping in, and I'm like, shoot, shoot, bird, you can't eat my tomatoes. And out he comes with that big yucky worm and eats it. And I'm like, huh, there we go. I asked for help and help came.
Yeah, exactly. So it's almost like gardening teaches you to, well, it I mean, it has so many lessons with just showing the beauty of nature and how, you know, things do interact with each other and work together.
Oh, and I have to say, I have to mention this, and I'm sorry I interrupted, but I have to say this, that if you want to raise eco-friendly, eco-minded children, plant a garden. If you want to explain a miracle to a child, plant a garden. It is the absolutely most amazing thing that I have done is to plant a garden with my children and see what they have learned. During the pandemic, when they were homeschooled for 1.5 years, The garden was their math class, their nutrition class, their biology class, their science class. They learned so much from it. And if you talk to my kids today, who are now 10, 12, and almost 17, it's funny because when they talk about that one day they're going to move out, they always talk about they're going to plant a garden and have a garden.
Yeah, that is amazing. So circling over to your compost. So it sounds like right now you have a fairly large compost pile. Was there ever a time when you were composting, doing countertop composting?
So my husband is the king of compost, I call him, because I am not so big on the compost, only because, well, all kinds of little critters move in there and I kind of don't like that. So I'm admitting, I'm leaving that for him. So he teaches composting in classes, but he always said that we have four composts. We have a garden compost where we put all the dead plants and stuff like that. And also chicken poop, because it has to be composted before use. We have a bokashi compost, which is fermenting and you bury it in the garden. Worm compost. And then chickens, who are the cutest composters and the most finicky ones.
Yeah. Okay. So, because I mean, at this point, I've given up on having a compost pile because I have tried it several times and my husband has kiboshed it every time because I'm not doing it right. so what we're doing right now is just letting San Diego compost it with the green bins. But we compost a lot of stuff. It's still something where I wish, like, I really would like to have a compost just to, you know, nourish my own garden. Because I think with this, I definitely struggle a little bit, but I haven't found a good, I haven't found a happy medium here on it.
Sounds like you need my husband's composting class. He's available. Okay. He is fantastic. That man, and considering that when I met him, he had never grown anything in his whole life, and he didn't even know where certain vegetables came from. I'm so impressed with him that he is now so into gardening and composting and growing food.
Okay. Another thing, you mentioned that you have a dog. How do you make your own dog food?
No, you can actually buy in San Diego dog food in bulk. So that's what we do. And I have to say, I did a whole post actually on our website about how to go zero waste with a dog. And I can say that you can't go 100% zero waste with a dog. We didn't, when we got to Astro, we never thought about, okay, what waste was he going to bring? That he brought his own little waste stream and his own carbon or paw print, I guess I should say. Anyway, but we can buy snacks and you can buy food in bulk. We are very lucky that Astro is not, he doesn't like to poop when he's out and about. So he is a garden pooper. you cannot compost dog poop with your regular compost. You can compost it for using it for flowers and plants, for plants that you're not going to eat because it has some bacteria in their poop.
Okay. So do you compost your dog's poop?
Yes.
Okay. And then what about pee? Because for us, that's also a challenge is the area where they use the bathroom, it starts to smell after a while. And so we spray, we use an enzyme spray, but still, you know,
it's not perfect. Yeah. I haven't had that though, because Astro, he pees a little bit everywhere. So we don't have that problem with him. But I could see that there'd be a problem. So I really don't know how to resolve that. How you can train the dog to go pee a little bit everywhere, perhaps. We haven't had any problems so far with his pee. So.
Okay. There was another completely different piece that I wanted to ask you about, and I don't remember what it was. Out of the entire, so as Well, actually, I do want to ask you. So, what do you do with your eggs?
Oh, so well, this has been a bigger controversial topic of for us, I think, ever. It is what we do with our chicken eggs. Well, we don't eat them, obviously. So we obviously are, well, let's put it this way. Chickens lay eggs, no matter what you want them or not. Most of our chickens do not lay eggs because they're really old. Our chickens, they come to us at different ages. We have baby chickens because we rescue them. Our chickens will live with us until the day they die, and then they will be buried and mourned because my kids like their chickens. But we don't eat the chicken eggs, so we give them to friends and neighbors instead, and usually in exchange for some vegetables or fruit or something else instead. But we do use the chicken egg shells to make calcium powder that we use for our tomatoes.
Right. Yeah, I love that. Is there, while we're talking about kind of garden fertilizer, and we talked about compost, we talked about the eggshells, is there anything that you've found that you have to supplement with in particular? And if so, how do you go about doing that, trying to find a natural source for that?
For fertilizer,
Yeah, like magnesium or anything.
no, I mean, if you want to have magnesium, you can use Epsom salt, and that you can buy in bulk. So that's a really good one, especially if you have lawns, you can sprinkle that on. But other than that, bokashi and compost is the only thing we use, and mulch, of course. And we don't seem to need anything else besides that.
Okay. Then I wanted to ask you about water usage, because, for that, what does that look like? And when you're going zero waste, it's still, I mean, yeah, water is ultimately recyclable, but is there a way that you've reduced the amount of water that you've used both in your garden and then in your house?
Absolutely. So there used to be one person living in our house with, and they had lawn, like grass and sprinklers. And when we moved in and removed all the grass, well, obviously we reduced the water need. But a lot of people had questions and concerns that we were growing vegetables in our backyard when there was a drought. But I always remind people that no matter what vegetables, fruit, meat, or whatever you're eating or drinking, comes with the water use. The difference for us is that we know how much or little water we use, and we are very smart waterers. So first of all, we noticed that when that one person with the grass moved out and we moved in, and because we are a pretty water-wise family, that we actually use about one third less water than one person did. Which is pretty impressive considering we're five people. But we use gray water from the laundry machine that waters all our fruit trees. So we don't have to water them. Because we mulch and compost a lot, and we cover our plants and create a natural shade for them during the hot months, we reduce the water use. And we only water in the morning, in the evening, excuse me, in the evening. When the sun goes down, because then the plants had the most amount of time to absorb that water.
Okay. So when you, how do you redirect your water from your laundry? And are you using, I mean, I imagine you're already using a very green detergent, but are you diverting both the wash water and also the rinse water, or just the rinse water to water in your garden?
All the water from the laundry machine, and because we use soap nuts, but there are other
Yeah.
laundry detergents you can use. It is actually the salt and the enzymes in them you have to look for. And today you can just check. Like I know that there are these laundry detergent like sheets, and when I looked into those, they are all gray water safe. So you just check if they're gray water safe. That's what you look for. But because we use soap nuts, we don't have a problem with that. And we don't use any other chemicals in it. So,
Okay. So how do you divert it though? Do you just, you're just rerouting your drain
Yes.
tube from your laundry into, like, what do you route it in? Do you extend it so it goes directly out into your garden,
So
or?
my husband did this, and I think he just Googled it and figured out. So he just redirected from a laundry room and then buried it underneath, and it went to all the trees, and he made like little holes that
Okay.
so the water it.
Okay. Did you have to bury it? Did you have to, like, put it under tile or anything within your house, or how is it?
No, it goes up because it's from our garage, which is right next to the garden. So,
Oh, okay.
yes, we
Okay,
just
and then
created a
just out.
hole, and instead of the water going that way, it's going that way.
Okay. All right. Yeah, thank you for indulging me on that one. Then a question about your soap. So, do you reuse those? Like, how many cycles do you reuse those for? And then, do
Five.
you five cycles? Okay. And then you just throw them in your compost. Okay.
Less like my daughter is in charge of laundry these days, and sometimes she accidentally puts them in the dryer because she doesn't see them. Then obviously, then there we have to use new ones. But usually, a bag of soap nuts is like this big, and it will last us over a year. So it's a very good deal.
Okay. How many do you typically throw into a wash?
About five.
Okay. And then you
Yeah.
reuse them
We've
five
been
times.
doing this for over 10 years, well, actually 12 years now, is since we started washing them, and everyone thinks they don't get clean and stuff like that. I can tell you that I had the real tests because I washed cloth diapers with soap nuts and they got clean.
Okay. Have you explored any more making your own shampoo with soap?
Nope, I learned my lesson. It was not a good thing, not for me. I think that if I had like really nice straight hair, maybe it would have worked better, but no. I do make my own lotions and facial things and stuff like that because I do enjoy that deodorant because it's so easy and I know what's in it, but not
Yeah.
shampoos.
Okay. All right, as we start to wrap up, is there anything that you want to be sure to mention to listeners?
So, if for anyone who is interested in starting to grow food versus that is on in a small garden, if it is on a patio, on a balcony, or even in your windowsill, I have my gardening class you can sign up for. It's really fun. And you right now, if you sign up, you actually get 1 hour Zoom one-on-one with me, talking about the course and asking any questions afterward.
Okay, great. And how can people connect with you?
You can go to our website, zerowastefamily.com. And there you can find we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're on YouTube. We're on YouTube once a week. We post something, and it's usually about zero waste, vegan food, or gardening, lots of gardening ones.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time, Frederica.
Thank you for having me.
Next time on the podcast, we are continuing our sustainability series with Liz Murphy, the founder of Santosha Nutrition and Sustainability is Sexy. Liz, you have likely heard me say this by now because I feel like I've said it on the past couple of episodes that Liz and I had the opportunity to spend a Sunday afternoon together, and her concepts of sustainability really challenged me. I mean, I thought I was doing a decent job of sustainability, and Liz put me to shame. So, anyways, it definitely expanded my perspective of easy ways to bring more sustainability into your day. And I think that this meshes really well with Frederica's message today of zero waste. It's all about just, opening our eyes a little bit and starting to realize easy ways to incorporate this into our day. It doesn't have to be some huge monumental overnight shift, a magnitude 8.0 earthquake or anything in our lives. It can be gradual. And again, it's kind of amazing just how easy it is to make these little changes. And then next thing you know, a year from now, you are living a completely different lifestyle because of it. So, until next time, if you enjoyed today's podcast episode, please take a quick second before you leave and share this with a friend. Also, please leave a five-star review. By taking the time to rate this podcast, you are helping more eyes get onto it. You're helping increase visibility. I so appreciate it when people take the time to leave a review. And as always, if you send a screenshot of that review over to rainorganica@gmail.com or hey as in HEY at rainorganica.com, either one of those will find me, then I will send you a little something as a token of my appreciation. All right, until next time, bye.